This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Rongi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, good friends. We are having a good one today, I'm telling you. We're going to have a good one today, John.
We're on a bender.
Yeah, no Amy Marks Kors again.
She's gone again.
Well, she hasn't come back yet, so she's been out. She's been out. Is she in Canada?
Could be.
So she's not out of the country. She's just somewhere else.
Out of town.
Anyway, Amy is out. John Hancock is in again today. 314-436-7900. Join us on the show. Odyssey app. Listen to us there and leave a voice message from the app. And also, we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. We look great. Look at us.
Yeah, I know.
It's at Chris Amy KMOX. You better follow us.
Although I did a good job on my hair this morning.
Well.
Time now for the top of the order.
What is that, wax?
Top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Well, a federal court of three judges has blocked Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs. This is happening as Elon Musk is being offboarded from the federal government.
And that is happening while the Missouri National Guard is preparing sites to collect tornado debris in North St. Louis.
And the Cardinals beat the Orioles in a series. They have the day off before getting after it against the Texas Rangers on the road starting tomorrow. And as we discussed yesterday, City SC has relieved Olaf Melberg of his position as head coach. Today at 12 o'clock, there is a press conference, and we're going to bring it to you right here on KMOX.
You know, spelled backwards, that's Greblem Folo.
Why are you even trying? It would be Greblem.
Greblem.
Yes, Olaf Greblem. You know, he used to do that a lot, spell names backwards. It would be Harry Carey.
Harry Carey. Yeah,
he used to do that a ton.
Yes,
That was his thing. Speaking of baseball, how about these birds, Jonathan?
Look,
Baltimore sucks. I mean, not the town's fine. I had a good time there.
Yeah.
But the team is bad. They shouldn't be this bad, but they are. And the Cardinals keep finding ways to come back in games.
That's the thing. They were down 3-0 and 4-2 yesterday.
Now, what's interesting about the Cardinals, who have 14 comeback wins this season.
Wow.
Meaning they were trailing at some point in the year. That's good for about 8th in baseball. So you can be trailing in the third inning and, you know, score in the fourth. And if you keep the lead from there, that's considered a comeback win. They're doing most of it. And I guess this isn't totally unusual, but they're doing most of it early in games and in the middle of games. Mm-hmm. They have not really come back in the 8th or 9th inning to win a game, which doesn't really matter. I mean, the point is get a lead and hang on to it.
Sure.
But this team is doing most of its damage early and in the middle of ball games, and they're doing enough to win.
And the bullpen has been just spectacular.
Holding it down.
Yeah, and did not get a great start from Miles Michaelis last night, but it mattered not in the end.
So as you watch them play, John,
yes,
and we keep asking this question, and I've talked to you about it already a few times. We talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
How many days that go as each day goes by, how much more do you believe in them as the days go on? Because the more they do this, the more I do believe in them. I know there's going to be a rough patch that comes up here at some point. Happens to most baseball teams. So I'm aware of that part. But if they continue to win in the manner they are winning, it leads me to believe they can do this for most of the year, if not all of it.
I think it's definitely sustainable. I mean, you're not going to play 700 baseball, but I think they're going to win more series than not. And we're at 8 games over .500 right now. And if you win 4 of the next 5 series, you're going to be 10 games over .500 or better. And you know, I think this is a team that's got some real potential. Now, how deep could they go in a league that contains the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Mets and the Padres and the Giants? That's another question. But this is for the NL Central. This is pretty good. Now the Cubs are playing out of their minds right now as well. But
yeah,
they don't have a bullpen like the Cardinals do, and that's gonna bite them eventually.
If here's where the Cubs have to be hopeful, if you're looking at it from their perspective, they have to hope they sort of tread water up until the deadline. If they can make a deal prior to the deadline, that helps them out. And my guess is they're going to be aggressive in getting some relief help. So if they can stay about where they are, then they're going to be really dangerous after the trade deadline. So what the Cardinals are going to have to do is they will have to maintain a pretty good pace like they have been, and the bullpen has to stay strong. And they have to hope that starters continue to give them innings, because if that starts to peel back at all, it's going to put stress on the bullpen,
and then
there are going to be issues. I have this question, and we talked about this with Tom Ackerman yesterday on Gas House Gang, which is coming back again today at 12 o'clock. But the beginning of the show today will be primarily the City SC press conference, because that's going to happen at 12, or at least it's scheduled to be. Bernie Miklas is with me today. We talked about what would be a successful season. What would you be happy with as it pertains to the Cardinals? And I throw this question out to the listener, too, because over the last several years, and I returned to St. Louis in 2017, so they have had competitive teams most of that time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
With the exception of the last couple of years.
Right.
There was the one really bad year 2 years ago. Last year was better, but not a playoff team, obviously. So what do you consider to be a success here? Normally, I get frustrated with the Cardinals' philosophy of, hey, just get to the playoffs.
And see what happens.
All you got to do is get to the playoffs and anything can happen. And maybe the best and worst thing that ever happened to the organization is that they won in 06 and 2011, because it sort of confirmed to them, like, yeah, see, all we have to do is win 83 games and we can win the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or we could have the best team in baseball and get swept in the World Series. It doesn't matter. Which, those things did happen.
Yeah, and the 04 team was a good team.
Dynamite team.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's the right way to do it or the best way to win. So I've always been frustrated with that idea of just, it's the playoffs are a crapshoot. Get in and anything can happen. Yeah, there are some weird things that will happen in a postseason. There is some unpredictability. I get that, but it's not the best approach.
Sure.
For this season, however, because it was supposed to be a transitional year, and we've talked about that, you know, until I've wanted to throw up. Sure. But because it's a transitional year, I think this year, John, I would be more than satisfied if they just get to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, because it would have been unexpected. I think before that, though, they've got a decision to make at the trade deadline. Because they probably have one commodity that has high value, and that's Ryan Helsley.
Right.
Mats would have some value. I would think his contract's up. He's pitched very well. And there could be, you know, Eric Fetty. But Helsley would have real value. I mean, a team like the Cubs, for example, wow, what a transformation that would make.
Right. I doubt they would make that deal.
No, they're not going to trade him to the Cubs. Yeah. But they've got a real decision to make there, because they could really get something. And if they decide that they're going to go all in, they're going to keep Helsley, they're going to add maybe a relief pitcher at the trade deadline to kind of buttress the team and the bullpen, then the playoffs are, I think, mandatory at that point. If you keep those assets and don't make the playoffs, that's a failure.
But let me ask this question. They are three games out right now. Mm-hmm. They've been about 3-2-3 back and forth for the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we get to a week or two before the deadline, and they're still three games out, and there hasn't been a ton of movement there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Do you write it out and say, well, we'll see what happens in August and September? Maybe they finally overtake the Cubs? But if you haven't done it for 2 months...
I would trade Helsley at that point. I don't know that you'd get that much in return for Mats or some of the others, but I think Ryan Helsley could get you a major league ready prospect and a starting pitcher is what you'd want. And if you could get that done, I'd do it. If you can't get that done, I wouldn't do it.
That is it is going to be potentially a very difficult decision to be made in July.
Yep.
Because we could get to the middle of July and things look about like this, like the way they have.
Right.
Where they're competitive, they're still in it, but they haven't made up a whole lot of ground.
We will have had at least two series against the Cubs at that point. A four-game series and a three-game series, maybe another one by the trade deadline. And that's gonna tell you everything you need to know, I think.
And you know what? That you're 100% right. If you do well in those, then I think you're probably standing with what you have.
Yep.
Maybe you add something else, another arm to help, but you're not going to overextend yourself going into the deadline. Maybe if you find a starting pitcher, because that's another thing they're going to have to worry about is innings workload, for example, Libertor. Matthew Libertor,
yep.
Who has not thrown over 100 innings
ever
in his career yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't thrown over 90. So that's, you know, they're going to have a decision to make there, because ideally you want somebody who's been pitching like he pitches to give you at least 160. And I don't know that he gets to that. Maybe he does. Maybe they find a way to do it. Maybe they find a way to build in extra days of rest for him that will, elongate his season. But they're going to have a tough call to make.
Well, you've got McGreevy down there who's shown well in his brief MLB experience. And, I have more confidence in him now than I did when they brought him up last year. So you do have that asset. I don't think the younger pitchers are ready to go yet in the minor leagues. You pretty much made Graceffo a bullpen arm, and that's probably his future in the game. So, yeah, a starting pitcher would be, a good thing to pick up.
So this will be an interesting call. We'd like to hear from you what you think they should do. And this is just a hypothetical. The Cardinals are three games out leading up to the trade deadline. What do they do? Do you think they trade Helsley? Would you like to see them do that? Would you like to see them make a move or stick with what they have? Tell us what you think and why, because the Cardinals have not been in first place since April 2nd. So they've been in the last couple of weeks, as I mentioned, a game out, two games out, three games out, goes back to two. So, they've been right in this range behind the Cubs. Things could break, though, when those two teams finally start to play each other.
That's right.
Which is coming up here very soon. So let us know. 314-436-7900. Major Garrett is going to join the show. That'll be at 10:30. We will talk about these tariffs with him, what happens next, the fight that is to come with Donald Trump and the courts. Also, Bernie Miklas will be on at 11 o'clock with us today. As I mentioned, the Gas House Gang.
A great show.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great show. The Gas House Gang, Bernie's going to get preempted for City SC press conference. So we're going to bring Bernie in for a bit at 11. Matt Pauly's joining the show at 10 o'clock. We got a lot coming up here. John Hancock in for Amy. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
John Hancock in for Amy today. I'm Chris Ranji, 104.1 FM KMOX. Good to have you with us today. We were just talking about the Redbirds and
yes,
what would be successful for them. And I think just making the playoffs. I mean, in a normal year, I would say your goal should be to win the National League. It should not just be to win the division. It should be to win the National League. And none of this, we'll get in, see what happens stuff. So we've asked you what would be successful to you, in your opinion. This text message says success is making the playoffs and winning at least one round.
All right.
In a normal year, in any other year, I would agree with you. And who knows? I might change my mind. I might get to late August and say, this team better at least get past that first round. And if they don't, I'm going to be pissed. But right now, if they make it to the playoffs, I'll be pretty happy.
Oh,
I'm pretty happy with that.
Very happy.
Yeah. This message says, I don't think they make the playoffs without winning the division. So trade Helsley, Maton, Arenado, etc. Anyone with value that is not a youngster. I mean, Helsley still probably has quite a bit of time in him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not ancient. We're not talking about somebody who's 40 or anything.
A playoff team that's desperate for a closer will pay way over market value for Ryan Helsley. I don't know that Maton, he's been a great, you know, setup man.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he will have the value on the market like Helsley will. And so if you're going to get an A-level prospect that probably isn't going to do anything, I think I'd hold on to Maton and let him walk. He's got a one-year contract.
John, the Dome at America Center, when's the last time you've been there?
Man, it's been years. I had Battle Hawks tickets the week COVID hit.
Yeah. So did I.
Yeah. And so before that, I was at a 75th birthday party for a friend of mine. That's probably been 10, 15 years ago.
So the state of Missouri just did an audit on the Dome at America Center.
Yeah.
And in their findings, they say that the Dome needs $155 million in repairs over the next decade in order to stay viable, you know, because they still do, even though there's no NFL team, as you mentioned, the Battle Hawks play, they still have concerts, they still have conventions, and they use the Dome floor, you know, where the turf goes.
Yes. Garth Brooks, I went to the Garth Brooks concert there.
Garth Brooks, that was what, like 8-9 years ago?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they still use that surface. I mean, it does get used, maybe not as much as it does in some other cities. So it is still important to St. Louis, but if you've been to the building, it's kind of, you know, they got the new turf this year, which is great, but it's a bit dank, you know, it feels, and if you've been to another NFL type stadium anywhere else in the country and you've come back to the Dome, there is a clear difference.
Sure.
This is just not a top tier dome or a top tier stadium of that size.
They really don't have domes anymore in the NFL or so much. There was a while there where there were multiple numbers of these things. And I must confess that when I was in the legislature, the funding for the Dome, the building of the Dome, was a red hot issue. And I voted against it. And Robert Hyland called me.
Uh-oh.
And who I'd never met, but everybody knew who Robert Hyland was. And he was telling me, you must vote for the, you know, your deep voice and how important it was to the city and da da da. And I listened to him and I went out and voted no. So I was never a fan of this thing to start with because.
How could you not be? It's important. We need it.
Yeah. You know. So anyway.
What do you mean no?
Well, I mean, tax dollars for the, you know. But anyway, that being said, we built the darn thing and there it sits. And it housed an NFL team for however many years it was, 19 or whatever. And, I think the real problem here is that the county's not ponying up its share of the deal. Isn't that the issue?
So that is the issue now, is that the county no longer wants to, even though they've taken in money on hotel taxes, for example, they no longer want to send money here. And I guess the argument is they don't have it.
Yeah.
They're saying they don't have enough money to come here. And now the St. Louis Regional Convention and Sports Complex Authority is looking for a different revenue source. And by the way, this $150 million number is not really new. I mean, we kind of knew that last year.
Yeah.
That's what the projection was last year. And now the state has audited it and basically backed that up. So we know that something has to happen here. But the convention and sports complex basically is, and I agree with them, they are concerned that the building will just sort of fade away, which is not... In a city that we are trying to revitalize, I think the last thing we need is to have our largest venue just die slowly, which I don't think will happen. I think something is going to, I don't know what, maybe this is just an optimistic viewpoint, but I think something will end up coming in to save it. I just don't know what that'll be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not particularly any longer an attractive convention destination city. That would be nice if that changed.
Right.
And this thing is an asset. It's 32-33 years old, however old. I mean, it's not that old of a building. And
yeah, it's about 30.
Yep. And I think you could make it attractive and upkeep it. And the county, you know, in all of this story, the fact that the St. Louis County government cannot make ends meet and hasn't now for some time is, I think, an outrage. It's the most populist, most wealthiest political
jurisdiction. A lot of money in the county. So why does that happen?
It can only be mismanagement. And not being able to make those ends meet, I think, is an absolute travesty. And the fact that they say they can't afford to fulfill their commitment to the St. Louis Sports Commission or the Dome Complex or whoever they're supposed to give the money to, that's a real problem.
Well, it'll be a real problem if that building is allowed to die. I don't know what will save it. I have a feeling something will step in to help, but I don't feel confident that whatever happens with the building, I don't think you're ever going to walk into that building and go, wow, this looks great.
Yeah.
Look, what have they done in here? All these renovations. And right now, they just need money for maintenance,
right?
Like simple maintenance. Forget about improvements. We just need to keep the building in shape so that we can have events there. It's John Hancock with us. I'm Chris Ranji. We mentioned the tariffs off the top, and a federal court has struck down the sweeping tariffs. We're going to talk about what that means. We'll get John's opinion on that. That's coming up next. It is John Hancock and Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're watching us on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, you can leave us a comment.
Yes.
As Jake did a moment ago. He said hi to the two of us, which was nice.
Nice of Jake.
Yeah, you can also text us 314-436-7900. Voice messages to the Odyssey app. We welcome those as well. And you can be listening to the show on the Odyssey app. And that's where you get our podcasts later. Did you know that?
I did.
And KMOX.com.
It's all free.
It's super free. Mm. It's hyper free. It's the freest of free. John, so earlier today, we found out that a court based out of New York, but it is a federal court made up of three judges. One of them, by the way, was appointed by President Trump. It has basically said, they have ruled that he cannot implement sweeping tariffs and has ordered the administration to comply within a week and a half, so 10 days.
Sure.
And as soon as that happened, you saw the markets, they exploded this morning. They went up because the markets don't,
that.
They don't like tariffs.
Nobody.
A handful of people do.
Yeah.
And economists and people who are in this world have been warning about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. It is a bad idea. It's a terrible idea.
Right.
But they've pushed through with it, and the markets have responded appropriately. So there's going to be a fight coming. I don't know that that's the end of this. I really don't think it is. Somehow my gut tells me that they will end up getting their way anyway. I don't know how that's going to happen, but as you see it, how are we going to be affected? Because I don't think our trade partners necessarily feel more comfortable today, because there's still a lot of uncertainty behind it.
So the question of law here is, do the conditions that exist constitute an emergency? Because the president,
that's what he'll try.
The president can only impose these tariffs under the emergency clause.
Right.
And the three-judge panel said there's no emergency. So tariffs are fine, but the president cannot arbitrarily set them. that has to be done by an act of Congress. So that's the legal environment that we're in. The Justice Department has already begun the effort to go to the Supreme Court and see if the Supreme Court will side with the administration here. And we do know that the Supreme Court tends to skew towards executive power. You'll remember that case that they decided during the Biden administration dealing with the executive branch's immunity, and they sided on the side of the executive branch has broad immunity. So that's going to be interesting to see. I don't know how you make the case that there's an international trade emergency that's sufficient to give the president the sole authority to impose tariffs. I would be surprised if the court came down that way, but they do slant towards executive power. So it's going to be interesting. But in the meantime, I guess all of these tariffs that have been threatened, and it's hard for me to keep up with what's been actually implemented versus threatened versus enacted and drawn versus proposed and delayed.
Or modified.
Yeah. So, you know, does everything go back then to the way it was on January 19th? I think that would be good for international trade. But because of the uncertainty and because of the Supreme Court, and that's going to take however long that's going to take, and it's going to be a long time, I still think the uncertainty in the economy is not going to be for the best.
That is the problem, because investors and people who run businesses still can't plan ahead the way they would normally plan ahead, because they still don't know what these tariffs are going to look like if Trump ends up winning in court, if he wins in the Supreme Court. And I have a real question about that, because the Supreme Court a couple of times has surprised me, even though he's had the ability to appoint a third of it himself.
Yep.
And a couple of those justices have voted in ways that are in conflict with what he believes. Right. And over, you know, there have been a handful of cases that way in the last couple of years, which have surprised me.
Yeah.
So do they do it here? Because this is not immunity. This is not.
Right.
Immunity from prosecution or immunity from criminal action or whatever. This is about the economy. This is different. So do you still think they try to shoehorn a decision in his favor?
I would expect they would uphold the lower court. I would suspect that. Because the one thing you could say, the judges that President Trump appointed are, you know, they are strict constructionists. They are originalists. Their entire judicial history has not been one that supports policymaking. And, you know, liberal judges have used the court for decades to make policy. That's not what the courts are for. Conservative justices are there to interpret the Constitution and the law that's at hand. And I think the law at hand here is pretty clear that emergency conditions do not exist such that the president should have unilateral authority to make tariff policy for the country. That should be the domain of Congress. And under a separation of powers, which conservative justices believe in, I suspect they will uphold the lower court.
Let me ask you this question. Do you think, especially the judges that he appointed, mm-hmm. do you think there are moments when they are formulating their decisions, where they, even if they don't say it out loud, that somewhere in the back of their minds, they are thinking, okay, how can I placate this person who has appointed me? Or how do I placate the president? How do I formulate a decision, a ruling that sort of fits into that, but also has, you know, some legal basis too? I mean, do you think they do that ever?
I don't. I mean, the two justices that have been most faithful to Donald Trump have been Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch.
Yeah.
So I don't. I think Amy Coney Barrett's been pretty independent. Kavanaugh
has, too.
Has been pretty independent. So I don't. I mean, one of the things the founders got right, and I know a lot of people don't like this, but the fact that the Supreme Court is a lifetime appointment, they don't have to worry about any of that stuff. The political implications or ramifications or how popular they are or what their standing with the president is. None of that matters. And that's by design. And I think it's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing, too. I think that they are independent of the president after appointment is a good thing. I don't know that I necessarily like the idea of a full lifetime appointment.
Yeah.
Then maybe it's 10 years or something. You know, you are at least beyond two terms of a president, right? Like a president, if he gets two terms, is in office for 8 years. Well, you get 2 years beyond that, right? So I don't know. I don't know what the limit should be, but I don't know that it should be a thing where you get this job and, hey, rest of your life, you just have it. Do you have some feeling in you that maybe there should be a limit to that?
I wouldn't put up picket signs if they limited the term, but I think the lifetime appointment is appropriate for the Supreme Court. And if you look at where things are right now, there is no, in our system right now, there's literally no checks coming out of Congress in the checks and balances of power.
Right.
There's zero coming out of Congress. It is the courts that are providing the only check on what's happening in this government right now. And I think those courts need to be as depoliticized as possible. And I think the lifetime appointment is part of that. And I think it's helpful.
This will be really fascinating to see how this plays out. It's too bad that it does affect people in a major way. You know, that in the process of waiting to find out how they rule, people will end up being affected. Businesses are going to be affected. Individuals are going to be affected. You know, if they lose work or whatever the case may be, it's too bad. But if you could separate yourself from that, super fascinating.
Yeah.
But it's tough to separate yourself because there are real world consequences for average people.
The historians are going to have a field day with this year.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
And I won't be around to read them. but they're going to have an absolute field day, you know, 50, 60 years from
if
now.
If we have historians, looking, then.
Yeah, well, we will. We will.
You feel you're an institutional guy.
Totally.
I think I am. I discovered this recently within the last couple of years that I didn't realize that I was. But the attacks on the FBI, for example,
yep,
which have been, you know, up until this administration, they've been rampant. I always felt pretty defensive of them in the last couple of years because yeah. I thought, by and large, the people in that office are trying to do good work. I know FBI agents now,
sure,
you know, of local agents yeah. and now some who've moved on to DC. Mm-hmm. And there's not any part of me that thinks they have an agenda other than to try and get it right. And that's just an example. The FBI is just an example.
Sure.
There are some bad actors in each department.
There's bad actors in everything.
Everything.
You've got bad actors at Odyssey. Yeah, there are bad actors in baseball.
In this room.
Yes. You've got bad actors in everything, in every school, in every institution. That is because human nature is, you know, we're broken. And so you cannot judge an institution by virtue of the fact that they've got bad actors in them. And I think one of the things that we have done as a society is we have so spotlighted the flaws of individuals and extrapolated that to demean entire institutions.
Right.
And when the American public loses faith in our institutions, and many have, that is undermining everything. And we don't, in my opinion, we don't do a good enough job of teaching civics to our children. We don't do a good enough job of explaining the beauty and wisdom of the American construct of governance. Not perfect, but it's the best when done properly. And because of that, and because of all of the outrage that is generated today through social media and other places, Americans have lost faith in their institutions. It's one of the reasons that Donald Trump was so widely popular, because he was speaking out against the institutions of our government. And people resonated with that. And here we are.
No, I think people have legitimate gripes with the government, with the way, not everybody does. I think some people complain just to complain, but there are a lot of just regular folks out there that have real, honest to God hardships that they have to deal with every day. I think they might direct their anger at the wrong focal points, though.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, we were talking about this in the office yesterday, that I think that over time, and this has been it's a tactic that works. So the people in power, the people with resources, have used this tactic for centuries.
Yeah.
Where they take the middle class and the poorer class and the people who do just try to get by, and they pit them against each other. And they say, you know why you have problems? Because there are too many immigrants. There are too many immigrants in this country, and they're taking all of your jobs. When really, all the money's getting funneled upward. It's we focus our anger at the wrong damn people. And that I think, goes to some of the institutions, too, like the FBI we're talking about, right? Like, I personally don't think Dan Bongino or Kash Patel are good faith actors. I just don't. But I think the institution is important. And
I think very important.
And I think the institution will ultimately outlast them.
Yes.
I think it will thrive once those two people are gone.
Well, and I mean, you just think about the stuff that the FBI does that you don't think about, the counterterrorism activities,
right,
that they take place.
Or investigating cyber crimes, which,
yes,
you know, on a local level, you know, there was an adolescent a few years ago who ended up committing suicide because he was, and this was a local kid,
yeah,
who committed suicide because there was some bad actor somewhere. It may not have even been a domestic person. I'm not sure who it was, who, you know, tried to blackmail him and said they had photos of him or something, and they were going to spread it to the class if he didn't do this, that, or the other thing. And they investigate stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, the fraud and the sorts of crimes that do have impacts on regular people every single day, that's what they do. So I have faith in that institution. That's just one of the institutions. It's just sometimes there are people in those institutions that aren't working in good faith.
And, you know, you're not going to find any institution where that's not the case.
Well, and like right now, as I said, I don't like Bongino. I don't like Patel.
Right.
I'm not here saying that they should dissolve the entire FBI because I don't like the guys in charge right now. That's John Hancock.
That's
he is in for Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. The text line and the phone line open, 314-436-7900. Did you see this is next.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
What did you see there, Ron?
Well, John, what did you see?
I haven't seen anything.
You did not. You're not bringing any stories from the
shower?
Yeah.
Not today. Okay. Had an uneventful morning in the shower this morning.
Okay, that is good.
Yeah.
So here's what I did see.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how you're related to Taylor Swift.
Yes.
So I went to that website,
yes,
famouskin.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Turns out I am also related to Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I know. We're cousins. You and
so
I.
You and I.
Yeah.
Oh, we did talk about this.
Yeah, we talked about
it. Oh, thank God. Okay. How about Bing Crosby?
No.
I'm related to Bing Crosby.
I am not related to Bing Crosby.
I get the sense that all of us are related to all of us.
Well, if you go back to the beginning.
Right.
That's likely the case.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's right. I guess that's probably true, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing, though. You know, you got a chicken over here, and you got an egg over there. And
oh, wow.
Did the first chicken come out of the first egg, or was the first chicken created and then created an egg?
I think there was an egg first.
Well, I mean,
don't know where it came from.
You know, we may never know the answer to that question in this life, anyway. But it's a question worth asking.
Did you see that?
I did not,
John. Oh. That Elon Musk.
I did.
Is being offboarded
Yes, he is going to step aside from Doge.
He is stepping aside, and there is a rule that a special government employee, which is what he was designated as, has a 130-day time limit, that after 130 days, he has to be removed from government. He is stepping away so that he can focus on his companies, he says.
They've been having a rough time, those companies.
Well, yeah, because people don't like him. There's some people like him, but he has really turned off a lot of the American public and really a lot of the world, because we've seen Tesla sales over in Europe drop by like 50%.
Yeah.
He's just an unlikable person, and he has exposed himself too much. Not in that way, but he has exposed himself, and they're just, ugh, they don't want anything to do with him. At any rate, he is leaving government right now, and we heard about this a couple of months ago that he was going to.
Right.
They could still keep him around if he wanted to be around, or if Donald Trump wanted him to be around. He could be a special advisor.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So there's got to be something more going on here. I don't think it's just this 130-day thing.
Well, I don't think it. I think he's proven not to be an asset to Donald Trump. And, you know, I predicted from day one that that relationship was not going to withstand the test of time.
No.
Because they're very similar human beings. And as long as, you know, as long as Elon Musk was a benefit to Donald Trump, and he was, I mean, he funded a massive amount of the campaign activity. And as long as that benefit existed, the relationship was fine. But as Elon Musk has lost popularity, he's no longer providing value to Donald Trump, which is the only thing that matters as far as the president's concerned. And so I'm not surprised in the least that Musk is gone.
I'm not either. You figured it would come to a head at sure. some point. He also recently objected to this big, beautiful bill because, in his opinion, it does the opposite of what Doge was trying to do, which is decrease spending.
And that right there is proof positive that that relationship is fractured. Elon Musk would not have said something like that 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And I'm convinced the relationship is fractured. I happen to agree with Musk about this bill, but we'll see. This bill as it exists is not going to pass.
I know it won't. I think a version of it is going to pass.
I do think it's going to pass something.
And I do think that ultimately a lot of the people who voted for the president are going to be hurt by it. And they may not realize that they are about to be hurt by it in some way. And it may not be noticeable right away, but eventually it's going to catch up to them. And hopefully they have a realization that, this didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. But my guess is it'll be blamed on somebody else.
Probably.
Which is usually what happens. Did you see that now there are, John,
yes,
ways to keep conversations from being boring? There is research that says that one of the things you can do to keep a conversation going,
yeah,
like when you're in a party or whatever,
right.
You can ask something. You can ask somebody, what have you learned recently?
Huh.
And generally, you'll get good responses. People will talk about it, and the conversation can go on for another 20 minutes as a result.
Let's try this out. What have you learned recently, Ron?
I just learned that if you ask that question at a party, that you might be in a conversation for another 20 minutes. So I won't ask that that question if I don't want to be in that conversation anymore.
Huh. Fascinating. I haven't learned a darn thing.
You haven't?
Nope.
Okay. That's John Hancock. I think he's learned more than he's letting on. He just won't admit it.
Nope.
He's in for Amy Mark's course.
I am.
I'm Chris Ronji.
You
314-436.
Nothing but truth being spoken at the moment.
7900. I don't lie to you.
No.
When we come back, we will talk about the Redbirds, the hot, hot Cardinals, and hot Fredbird. The hot Cardinals. Matt Pauly, host of Sports Open Line pre- and post-game coverage, joins us next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.